forgiving evil. The introductory quotes to Science and Health are always an excellent place to begin because it is believed that that is the groundwork, the overbearing thought that we should all hold as we study anything within the pages of the textbook. The first one is from John, and it's quoting Jesus, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Number two is from Shakespeare, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Number three, from Mary Baker Eddy, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." They're very short, directly to the point. Each one of them have a unique purpose in being there. The first one, we better be sure that we are never stopping questioning because we're searching for the truth, not an opinion, whether it's ours or anyone else's. We're searching for the truth, and we will be free of any mistakes if we constantly pursue the truth. Shakespeare, whatever we have in our thought is what we're going to experience. Mary Baker Eddy's quote, "Thou hast heard my prayer and I am blessed." What is prayer? Prayer is the way we're living. The Bible says, pray without ceasing. That must mean the way we're living our life is our prayer. So there's the foundation that we want to always keep in thought as we are reading, whether it's a cursory paragraph or whether it is in-depth study. These are the three overlying guidelines. What about evil? We've discussed it in numerous recordings, and we know that there are three very predominant deceptions that are always being offered by a suggestion of evil for someone to bite on them and give them a home, letting them use their mouth, their ears, whatever, to spread the word and to establish it in individual consciousness. The main way that evil operates is through deception. It deceives us about everything possible. It deceives us about its motive, about the facts, deceives us in terms of disparaging the character of anyone that is bringing forth the truth to expose the evil. It is doing what it is accusing others of doing, so it uses their false accusation as a decoy to get the attention off of itself. It tries to divide and conquer. Divide and conquer is the tool in war. Evil is always at war, attempting to destroy any place that truth shows up. That is why, as we progress in our understanding of truth, that we are faced with more and more difficult forms of evil. More deception. More decoys. We may have a problem with a part of our body that has nothing to do with what the source is. It will show up that way, but the real problem is a totally unrelated source. We must remember evil has no power unless it is given power by one of its targets. It is like an atmosphere that is omnipresent, but it is helpless unless we give it a helping hand. So we need to do prayerful work to guard against universal belief of evil. We may not even be thinking about war, but all of a sudden, we will have a conflict in our life with someone or an event or whatever it may be, whatever form it may take. And it will be, as a result, likely of the universal belief of war. People are very fearful of war. Just in the last couple of days, there have been what looks like hundreds, or maybe even 1,000 or more, drones in the sky hovering over a couple of states. Well, in doing research about it, it appears there's only 10 or 12, and they have the capability to project a hologram, which makes it look like they have 10 times or 20 times or 50 times that amount. But in fact, there's only maybe a dozen. Again, they're trying to create fear for people to see these things in the sky and then get worried that we're being invaded. And then there will be the proposal by the evil people that will say, oh, we've got to go to war with such and such because they're flying these drones over here and they're planning to kill everybody in a particular state or a particular city or a particular multi-state area. It is all a mental control exercise. So we have to do our mental control defense system. We have to defend ourselves and not let these kind of fearful things enter into our consciousness. And we have to recognize it, just like Kurt Russell said when they asked him, how did he compare his life with the movies that he was in? And he said, well, the movies are just fantasy land. My life is what's real to me. Well, we have to consider any form of evil as fantasy land. It has no power unless we give it power. Now, the title of this is Evil Forgiving Evil. Now, this is not really what we are suggesting that be done. This is only a title to let you know that this is the temptation. This is exactly what evil would like to have anyone that it attacks do. Well, it doesn't attack anyone, it just is a suggestion, and we open our weak thought to it, and therefore it comes into our consciousness. But we have to be strong, and we have to have our defense system up so that we don't let the salesman get his foot in the door. Jesus never forgave evil. Never, never. He overturned the tables of the money changers. He didn't forgive them. He didn't think about them as a person. He thought of the characteristic of the function, trying to make a profit off of those who were going to their highest form of God, which was to attend the church, to try to escape from all of the problems that they had going on in their life. And that basically is considered a sanctuary that a lot of people look to for security or safety. And unfortunately, most of them look to an individual like the pastor or the priest or the rabbi, whatever kind of church or synagogue or building that you're attending. But the truth is, our only relief, our only defense, our only safety, our only security is what we're working out in our own salvation. And that is between God and us individually. No one else can be involved. We don't find it in a church. We don't find it in a so-called confession, like some of these churches or synagogues or whatever they have, whatever they call them, have, where they think that the one in charge of that particular building has the power to forgive the evils of someone else, evil acts. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. That's a money-making venture. In fact, that's one of the reasons why people believe that Jesus is God. Back in 325 AD, the three largest churches and the three largest governments got together, and they came up with some parameters on how they were going to promote religion, because they didn't want anything to happen to their money-making venture. And the governments didn't want to give up control, and the churches didn't want to give up their profit-making ventures. So they said, okay, well, Jesus will be God, and we will be able to let people come to us and confess, and then they can pay us, and we'll be paid for them confessing to us. But in fact, no one has the authority to forgive someone else for anything. If we condemn, then we've got to correct that. We can't forgive unless we've already condemned. And we shouldn't condemn in the first place, because we are not God. We can't judge. In fact, God doesn't judge. God has rules. God has characteristics such as principle and love and mind and spirit, soul, life, and truth. Those are the seven primary terms to define God. And if we break those characteristics, then we are outside of the protection of what those characteristics offer. If we're going to do stupid things, we're not going to be protected by the intelligence of mind. If we do things that, if we try to steal an idea from someone else, we're going to be outside of the law whereby mind gives us creative capability. If we're going to be lazy, we're going to be outside of the law of the capacity that mind provides, or the facility. If we're going to be lazy, we're going to be outside of the power of action, the action of mind. So it is we individually that dismiss ourselves from the power that comes with abiding by God's laws, God's characteristics, God's qualities. If we're going to worship matter, for example, money, or a house, or a car, or whatever it is, it can be in any form, doesn't have to be money, then we are outside of the law of substance, because the only real substance is spirit. So if we're going to be having that as our primary motive for anything, like Trump said, and also like Elon Musk confirmed, money cannot be your motive for doing anything. Trump made it very clear. He thought that he would fail on any project if he was motivated by the money. Yes, he made billions of dollars, and it was well earned and deserved, because he was very intelligent in the way he operated his business, and he decided that he was going to cater to the absolute ultimate class of luxury. And as a result, he has probably a better reputation than anybody else in the world for having the most luxurious facilities to cater to those who can afford to take advantage of them. Elon Musk, he has catered to the most advanced technology in spaceships, in electric vehicles. He's now developing AI. So he is catering to that area of the realm of possibilities of technology. Now, if either one of them didn't follow principles that govern, for example, Elon Musk has to be very aware of the principles of mathematics. Trump has to be very aware of the golden rule. If you were wanting to be a guest at one of the most luxurious hotels or golf courses in the world, what would you expect? So Trump caters to that kind of a client and gives what they expect. Therefore, he has the finest group of those categories of things that he specializes in. Now, if he's got an employee that does something bad, should he just forgive the guy? No, he has to separate the evil from the individual. And whatever it was that threw the employee off base and he violated the rules of working for Trump in whatever department it was, well, he has to make sure that there's not a problem with the rules and the guidelines that were set up. But you don't forgive evil ever for anything. Now, whether or not you overlook something that an individual did is, you know, there's no general guideline on that. It has to be individually administered based on intelligence and wisdom, based on making sure you're looking at the golden rule, but on the other hand, you're not going to lie down and let somebody run over you. Mary Baker Eddy said that she makes strong demands on love. That doesn't mean you let a child do whatever they want to do. What that means is you have to have the discipline that teaches them right from wrong, whatever that may require. You wouldn't let the child go running across the street by himself. No, you would make sure that there's protection, whether it's holding your hand or waiting until the light turns the right way for crosswalks to be active, or whatever it may entail. But no one should ever forgive evil for anything. Jesus didn't do it. Mary Baker Eddy didn't do it. But what they did do is they separated the evil from the individual. Now, if an individual keeps repeating evil, then you know that that's not someone that can be trusted. So you should make the change that is required so they are not a part of your organization. Unfortunately, we've had an entire government that has turned corrupt. And so that's why we have to go in there and do a major swamp draining. And there have been hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have been arrested and executed over the last 8 years. And that is continuing. So there is cleanup work to do until they are all rid of. But again, we don't try to focus on the individual, but we make a strenuous effort to not focus on an individual. But we must correct whatever evil was done. If, like I mentioned, if there's something wrong in the procedures, maybe they weren't vetted properly when they were hired. You know, it could be any number of problems that could have brought it about. But the point is, we have to separate the evil from the individual. And whether or not an individual is forgiven by the company for problems that they created or for violations of whatever, that is an individual thing that has to be done on a fair basis and an impersonal basis. But we can never forgive the act of evil, period. So there is no forgiveness of evil. Because of the fact that evil uses decoys and deceptions and disparage characters, as a matter of fact, evil will create an absolute lie. And they will promote the lie as being true. And one of our biggest agencies, which is the CIA, teaches their employees how to lie, cheat, and steal. Now, the U.S. government or any government should never have an agency that operates based on that kind of a moral standard or lack of moral standard. Okay? So That has to be totally rid out of there, whether it means the entire organization has to be dismantled and start all over, or whether it can be cleaned out. I mean, that is up to the people that are qualified to make those decisions. But we cannot ever have any progress if we let an evil be involved knowingly. And now it's pretty common knowledge that the CIA is corrupt from beginning to end. Now, there may be some good people in there, and maybe they want to keep those people after a vetting process that gives assurance that they are definitely good people. Whenever you have an organization that's corrupt, it doesn't mean that every single person in the organization is corrupt. There may only be one left that is good. And maybe 99 out of 100 are bad. Whatever the situation is, it needs to be dealt with in an intelligent, fair manner. We have to be aware of this universal belief of evil in all of the popular topics, such as war and whatever, sex, greed. I think those are the three biggest ones. And, of course, the war is used for money laundering. You know, people are emotional, so they will try to get the people upset, just like flying these holograms, and they're not even real vehicles, they're holograms. And they will try to get the people upset so that the people will agree to go to war with whoever they say is operating these drones. Who's really operating them is the U.S. government and an organization or an agency called DARPA, D-A-R-P-A. It's corrupt from beginning to end. That organization probably needs to be dismantled. Just like HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. That's the one that's been manipulating the weather, creating earthquakes and floods and hurricanes and all kinds of things. It's all man-made. It's made to try to convince the people that they cannot survive on their own, so they better just give up and accept communism, where the government will control everything they do and when they do it. That's their motive. Our job is to wake up and wake up other people as the opportunity occurs, so that we are not taken in and our friends are not taken in by this fraud. Just like the pandemic was a fraud from beginning to end. It was planned in advance, and they loaded those vaccines with bad stuff, and then they had a mandate that everybody had to do it. Nobody touched me. And everybody can be protected in the same way if they will be alert. So we need to know how evil operates, and then we need to protect ourselves by prayer and our treatments, recordings tell you how to do it. Give you suggestions, and then you have to decide on yourself what works for you. Mary Baker Eddy has given us every tool we need, along with some other very fine, advanced Christian scientists, with writings, and we have music, we have prayers, we have statements that are direct definitions, and all of these are very helpful in training our own consciousness on what we should be entertaining as our thoughts, so that we can practice what Shakespeare tells us, and that is our thinking. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So we can cultivate the kind of thoughts that are going to enhance our thinking in a very spiritual way. One of the tools that Mary Baker Eddy has so graciously given us are called the diapason of heaven. And since we're talking about the evil and how it lies and it's deceitful and it tries to mislead us with things that are the opposite of the truth, I will read to you the diapason of heaven that she has provided on the topic of truth. And it goes as follows. Diapason of heaven for truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. See how simple that is? Depending on the font size you use, I'm using a 14, which is kind of a standard. Some people like 12, but it's four lines. Four lines. And imagine if you just stated that to yourself once an hour. So if you're up 18 hours a day, you know, you would say it 18 times. Pretty soon you'll have it memorized. Or you might want to memorize it in the beginning. So you don't have to look at anything or listen to anything, that you can just recite it. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. We could substitute any number of things that are qualities of God. We could say mind is a sacred name for God. We must divest ourselves of all mortal mind. Or we could say divine mind is a sacred name for God. We must divest ourselves of all mortal mind. Declare often, divine mind is my God, and my God is divine mind. Good is my divine mind, and my divine mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. I am conscious of divine mind being my only mind. Mortal mind is a false concept of mind and has no reality in it, and I will not believe it as having any influence on me whatsoever. My substance is spirit, and spirit is the opposite of matter. And mortal mind is connected directly with matter. So therefore, I refuse to accept mortal mind as my mind or being able to influence the one and only divine mind of God. I reflect the divine mind of God, and I'm not going to let anything convince me otherwise, because that is the truth of being. Divine mind is omni-intelligence. Therefore, I am intelligent. Intelligence is good. Therefore, good is intelligence. I will only listen to the real intelligence, which is always good. And that will guide me to make intelligent decisions. I will not listen to ignorant bases. Any basis that I use must be a basis of intelligence. a wise basis, a knowing basis, because God is knowing, God is wise, and therefore as His image and likeness, I am knowing and I am wise. This was all extemporaneous. When I switched to divine mind for the same basic prayer, all I did was switch everything to be in coordination with divine mind. In other words, what's the opposite of divine mind? Mortal mind. What's the opposite of spirit? Matter. And mortal mind and matter work together because matter is the object of mortal mind. And then mortal mind believes that matter can then control mortal mind. So mortal mind creates matter, and then matter controls its source. I mean, the whole thing is totally absurd, but it's so easy to create our own diapason as long as we make sure that we are accurate in our statements. And if we stick to the definition of God, that guides us on exactly what kind of words we need to use when we create our own diapason of heaven. So we don't even have to memorize these. All we have to do is understand what they're saying, and then we can substitute the words. I enjoy substituting the words in the scientific statement of being all the time. The scientific statement of being says there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Now suppose you have a problem with something. It could be anything. It could be vision, it could be energy, it could be, you know, worried about war, or it could be personalizing someone that was doing an evil act. It can be any problem at all, because universal belief includes a mass of things, and so anything at all that is bothering us, we can just substitute the words to protect our consciousness from accepting something that is not true. Anything that's ungodlike is not true. So anything at all that tries to knock on the door of our consciousness, we can reject it if it is unlike God. So we could say something like, let's say personality was a problem. I mean, that's easy because, you know, evil is not done by itself. Evil is done because there is a person that is giving it a home, giving it a residence, giving it a mouth, giving it a ears and eyes and thought and, you know, feeling and taste and so forth. Okay? So all of our senses are utilized to promote whatever is in our thought. So all we have to do is change the words to adapt to whatever is the problem at the moment. So if personality is a problem, and like I said, that's easy because there's a lot of evil going on out there, and every single bit of evil is connected to a person or an event. You know, I'm thinking of war as, for example, an event, or these drones that they're flying around, which are really holographic projections. They're not even real objects because they can turn them on and off and they can just disappear. And of course, they can make them move tremendously fast because all they are is a projection. All they do is it's like moving the lens of a camera. You can go from one side of the room to the other instantly by just moving your camera. Well, that's what they're doing with these holographic projections of drones. As mentioned, there's only like a dozen drones in the air, but they make it look like there's hundreds, or maybe even more. So, let's think about personality. Everyone is an individual. An individual is a reflection of the qualities of God. It's a unique reflection of the qualities of God. Personality is also a unique projection, but it's a lie. It's a lie about man, because man is an individual reflection of God, whereas a personality is a projection of a fantasy. I am not a personality. I cannot believe in anyone else being a personality. I refuse to accept that evil can control any personality. Therefore, I am going to automatically divest the evil from the personality. And instead of thinking about a personality, I'm going to think about God and God's reflection in the form of individuals, unique individuals. And a unique individual cannot reflect anything except its source. God is the source of everything. And therefore, I can only think of an individual as being a reflection of God. And I'm not going to focus on another individual, because that's not my business. I just have to dismiss it in my thought so that I'm not letting an individual occupy my thought. That's their business. My business is to clear it out of my thought that they are a personality, because there is no such thing as a material personality, because there is no matter. John asked Jesus, is there a material body? Jesus said no. John asked Jesus, is there a material universe? Jesus said, most people believe there is, but there is not. Now, how clear can we be? Mary Baker Eddy says there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. Well, there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in the belief of a personality that is a personality of matter, or of material emotions and characteristics and thought, speech, and action. It is a false hologram. It is a false projection. It is a fantasy. It is not the truth about man or the truth about a reflection of God, and therefore it is not true. I'm not going to believe it is true. I refuse to believe it's true, and I'm going to focus on the truth about God and God's manifestation, which is unique individuality of myself. And if another person comes to thought, I'm going to think of them not as a personality made up of matter, having a material life, and peeking out and expiring into death. I'm only going to think of anyone else, if they come to thought, as an individual reflection of God, each one having their own unique characteristics, each one reflecting God with goodness. Goodness is the only thing that controls anybody. As Mary Baker Eddy stated, the good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. Now, that was not very long. What, 5 minutes or so? I don't know. I don't time my activities like that. If I spend, you know, an hour or two or 3 or 4 hours studying, I mark it down on my schedule when I begin and when I stop to make sure that I'm putting enough hours in the day. Because I certainly don't want to cheat God out of my time. And if we're really serious, we should probably be spending 30% of our time on God. I mean, that's only 7 hours out of 24. You know, what, 30%? 7.2 hours would be 30%. Believe me, you will see a progress in your life that's going to be leapfrogging. It's going to be moving so rapidly forward. Only because you're going to lessen the time that you can think about ungodlike activities, which are bombarding our thought all the time, because they are in the atmosphere of thought. Mary Baker Eddy talks about being bombarded. She says that mortal mind bombards us with material suggestions all day long. Reminds me of that comedian. He was talking about how much exercise you have to do to work off if you eat a certain thing. You know, like a piece of cake is, you know, maybe 1 hour of exercise. And he said, if you eat one of these Big Macs from McDonald's, you got to run all day long. So we have to study all day long if we want to really get rid of more things than if we only study an hour or 30 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 hours. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope. He went to a practitioner and he says, I'm working 18 hours a day. I've only got 6 hours left. And I'm so exhausted, I have to rest and sleep and eat and get ready to go back to work for the next day. He said, I don't know what to do. She said, how much are you studying? He said, I don't have any time to study. I'm working 18 hours a day. I'm gone from home 18 hours a day, including my travel time. He said, I don't have time to study. She said, if you don't have time to study, you're not going to make any progress. That's all she said. 5 hours a day, and you're not going to make the progress unless you study 5 hours a day. After contemplating it, he decided he was going to make the commitment. And so he did. And by the end of the week, his schedule had improved so much, he had no problem devoting 5 hours a day to study and still had time to rest. It's an individual decision. 1,440 minutes, how do we want to use it? I just gave you an example of how you can make up your own diapason. Just be able to say things backwards. You know, like truth is my God, and my God is truth. Divine mind is my God, and God is my divine mind. God is my mind, my only mind. I don't have a mortal mind, and no mortal mind can influence me. I cannot be under any erroneous influence from any source whatsoever, because I'm going to only permit God to be my source. No personal will is going to enter into my activities. Only the will of God is going to guide me, and I'm going to stick to that. I don't care what tries to confront me. I'm sticking to the truth about who God is, who I am, and there's nothing that can sever that connection. Period. If you talk and think like that, you will have wonderful progress. Nothing can edge its way into your activities. Nothing can alter your talk, speech, or action. You will make regular progress. You will have infinite progression working toward concrete being. And that's what we all need to do. Every one of us need to do that. For those of you who do not know this, the header is the section of a web page that is up at the top. And different websites are designed differently. We've designed ours so that the top of every page is the same. So no matter what page you are on, you can always navigate from that top section and see what are determined by us as very important topics, so one click will take you to a presentation that will let you explore as much as you desire to on that topic. Diapason of Heaven is a rectangular box that if you click on it, it will take you to a page which has the MP3s reading the Diapason of Heaven from Mary Baker Eddy, as well as a text version that you can read online or you can download. It's highly recommended that you only use these as a guideline, because that doesn't make it your own if all you're doing is reading someone else's words. I don't care what words it is. It could be the words of Jesus that is dictating the Lord's Prayer. It could be Mary Baker Eddy's spiritual interpretation of the Lord's Prayer. The point is, you have to make it your own. And if you click on the rectangular box in the header that says Heal Everything, it will offer you absolutely comprehensive, detailed instructions on how you can heal anything that is a problem. Guaranteed. And we have something like 85 people who have witnessed this process, and those people are still in the textbook 115 years after Mary Baker Eddy departed in visible form. So she's been gone 115 years, and yet no one has still ever challenged those people. So you may want to study Christian Science for two specific reasons that I can think of. One is, you just feel that there's a vacuum in your life, and you feel it's a lack of spirituality, and so you want to build up your commitment to there being a real God, and that God is there for a good purpose. The other reason that is popular is that you have a specific problem. It can be anything. It can be physical, it could be mental, it could be, you know, like a relationship. It could be something to do with an event or a function like your business, or a relationship with other people, either one-to-one or it could be a group. Okay, the next thing is that there will be a revelation that will probably be new to you, as very few people know this, and that is a relationship between Genesis chapter 1, which discusses the 7 days of creation, the commandments, which is from Exodus 20, the Beatitudes, which is part of the Sermon on the Mount, which is from Matthew 5, and the Lord's Prayer. And I'm going to refer to the one in Science and Health because that includes the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer. And that's on pages 14 through 17. 14 and 15 being an introduction to the prayer, and the actual prayer being pages 16 and 17. You're going to see an alignment of the thinking of these four entirely separate messages from different centuries and eras over the development of Christianity, beginning with the commandments, which are, what, 2,000 years before Christ Jesus, and the spiritual interpretation, which was 2,000 years after Christ Jesus, or, what, 1,800 years after Christ Jesus. And you're going to find that the order of development of each of these four entirely different messages are in total alignment. Now, if that is not a divine providence in how these unfolded to the recipients of these messages, you know, which is Moses and Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, then you're asleep. I'm going to read them to you right now. The first day of creation from Genesis chapter 1 says, "And God said, let there be light, and there was light." What are the key ideas there? Beginning, origin, cause, creator, action, power, law, intelligence, wisdom. What is the first commandment? And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Well, what does that talk about? Intelligence, action, power, light, guidance. You see how that coordinates with the other one? The other one was beginning, origin, cause, creator, action, power, law, intelligence. This one is intelligence, action, power, light, guidance. The Sermon on the Mount. The first beatitude. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The poor, the seekers for the light, intelligent desire, and action. I mean, it's the same terms. Intelligence, light, action. And then look at the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious. We're talking about Father. Okay, that's the origin, the source. Cause, the origin, the source. Creator, parent, mind. Mind is intelligence, wisdom, knowing. Can you see what's going on here? There is an interaction and connection with the four most important messages in Christianity. The days of creation, the commandments, the beatitudes, and the Lord's Prayer. Amazing, amazing. Let's look at number two. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. What do we have here? We have separation, where we're separating the pure from the impure. We have reality, where it is exposed. It is brought forth. It is revealed. We have order. We have substance. The commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me. The same thing. The onlyness, the purity, the order, and the separation. Separation from false gods. Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. True separation. The gain of the spiritual and the loss of the material brings purity, reality, and substance. And the Lord's Prayer. Hallowed be thy name, adorable one. There we are, sanctified, pure, and separate. Separate thy name, the only substance. Is this amazing or what? Okay, let's look at the third day. Soul is the term for God. The first one was mind, the second one was spirit, this one is soul. The third day of the days of creation. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. Well, what does that represent? Spiritual understanding, definiteness. In other words, we are being able to identify and define. It represents rule and identity. How about the commandment? Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. A material sense of identity brings penalty. Sinless soul knows no false identity and no penalty. The Beatitude: blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. The meek are those who discern only the true identity of soul. They inherit the earth. The earth idea, the spiritual idea, and are resurrected. The Lord's Prayer: thy kingdom come, thy kingdom is come, thou art ever present. So the immortality and the rule of the one infinite soul. You see how this all blends together so perfectly? The fourth one is on principle. Okay, here's the fourth day of creation. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Well, that represents spiritual power, classification, system, government, interpretation. You know, that all has to do with principle. The commandment: and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Well, that represents absolute honesty and obedience to principle. Brings blessing and demonstration. Okay, here's the Beatitude. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Obedience to divine government brings the fullness of demonstration to all mankind. And the Lord's Prayer: thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Enable us to know, as in heaven, so on earth, God is omnipotent supreme. The interpretation: the one supreme government establishes spiritual power. You see, that was mentioned in the very first one, which is the days of creation. Spiritual power, classification, system, government, interpretation. Second one said obedience to principle. Third one says obedience to divine government. And this says that there's one supreme government. These are all connected. You cannot separate them if you wanted to, unless you're just totally asleep. I mean, this is really important, this connection. Okay, number five is life. The fifth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. So love is life, fatherhood, multiplication, aspiration, method, individuality. The commandment: thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. The meaning: the one divine individuality demands eternal love, life, laying down the mortal for the immortal. The beatitude, blessed, are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. True fatherhood, divine mercy, is the way to eternal individuality and spiritual multiplication. The golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. You see how beautifully this blends together? Love is life, fatherhood, multiplication. That's the day of creation. The commandment, the one divine individuality demands eternal love. The beatitude, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread. Give us grace for today. Feed the famished affections. So eternity fathers and immortalizes being. Spiritual Interpretations by Mary Baker Eddy. Okay, number 6 is truth. The days of creation says, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Spiritual Interpretation, this is about health. The compound idea, true manhood, consciousness, form, the divine ideal. The commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor, and do all thy work. So the 6th day establishes true manhood, the divine ideal. Same thing as the 6th day of creation. And the 6th beatitude, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Well, there you go. Pure consciousness constitutes true manhood. And the Lord's Prayer, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And love is reflected in love. Love and truth make man free. Jesus, discerning the perfection, the perfect man, beheld God's reflection and established true brotherhood. And finally, the 7th, which is love, the day says this, and on the 7th day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the 7th day from all his work which he had made. So we're talking about holiness, fulfillment, perfection of love's design, peace, and rest. The commandment? But the 7th day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in the 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the 7th. Wherefore the Lord blessed the 7th day and hallowed it. Well, the spiritual interpretation, the ideal Christ at the point of fulfillment, love's design. See, the 7th day of creation was fulfillment and perfection of love's design, peace, and rest. The beatitude, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. The meaning, divine motherhood forever maintains peace. The Lord's Prayer, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And God leadeth us not into temptation, but delivereth us from sin, disease, and death. The meaning, love has fulfilled all good. Omni action. Well, there it is. 7 days of creation, the first seven commandments, seven beatitudes, and the seven verses of the Lord's Prayer. In total alignment and coordination and interaction. From 2000 BC and including Mary Baker Eddy, 1866 AD. So spanning almost 4,000 years, and yet they line up like clockwork. Like a big skyscraper building where everything has to be straight and in order for everything to work perfectly. Mary Baker Eddy says, love your enemies. But she says an enemy is only what we are thinking about in our own consciousness. It's not a reality. Evil is the enemy. Get rid of it in our consciousness, and it will be rid in our experience. We will be like Jesus. When he saw someone as he was walking along in the way or riding his animal or whatever he was doing, and he would stop along the wayside to heal somebody, he wouldn't see them as someone that needed healing. He would see them as the perfect man that other people were seeing as someone that needed healing. So he had to heal their perception of him and his own perception of himself. He didn't have to heal his perception because he was already seeing the individual perfectly. That's what we've got to do. We have to automatically translate whatever comes into our view. Like Mary Baker Eddy says in her letter on vision. She says, can you focus no matter what comes your way? Well, what does she mean to focus? Focus on truth. Focus on perfection. Not on what appears in fantasy land, as Kurt Russell calls it. No, we're not going to spend any time in fantasy land. We want to spend our time in truth. Is it clear how we handle evil? We have to depersonalize any sense of evil that appears to be connected to a person. And if we have a problem seeing that person as God's child, then we have to turn away from what appears as the person and focus on what is God. And what did God manifest himself to be? It included every man, woman, and child. Male, female, and neuter. Neuter being, like I say, qualities that have not yet been attached to an individual or that could be attached to a man or a woman or a child. How about innocence? Innocence is a quality. If we say an innocent child or an innocent man or an innocent woman, then that's a part of them. It's just a further explanation. It's an adjective that describes them. In a particular situation, probably, or a particular quality that they express on a regular basis. But it's a neuter quality by itself. Whereas strength is a quality that is considered a male quality, kindness and gentleness and nurturing a female quality. Anyway, it's easy to see what it is. No, we don't forgive evil. We punish evil, and how do we do that? By not giving it any power. We have to neutralize it. We have to neuter it. We don't give it a man identity. We don't give it a female identity. a man or a woman or a child identity. We don't give it an identity of an accident because all action is God. All action is the mind of God. We don't give it any identity because all identity is spiritual sense. That means spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. Understanding how evil operates is so critical to having success in healing. Mary Baker Eddy could not get her first issue of Science and Health published in 1875 until she wrote the chapter on animal magnetism. Chapter 5. It's only 7 pages long, or maybe 8 pages. I think it begins with page 100 and it goes to 107. So it's 8 pages long. But she couldn't get it published because that was required in order to have the book complete. We cannot have healing until we know how to identify and neuter error, evil, in all its forms, particularly the ones we're dealing with on the problem at hand. We are given all the tools. We are so fortunate. I am so grateful for every one in the Old Testament and New Testament that I've gained inspiration from, particularly people like Moses, Habakkuk who said, God is of pure eyes to behold evil. Solomon, you know, King David's son, who told God the only thing he wanted was the wisdom to judge his people fairly, and he ends up being the wealthiest guy in the world, probably to this day. We've got Isaiah, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. Obviously, Matthew, through Revelation, includes words from Jesus, and particularly John, the only disciple that was faithful to him. We have the early church fathers that had a good sense of Christianity up until 315 or 325 AD. And then we had 1,500 years of dark ages, until finally Mary Baker Eddy came forth and reestablished the healing element of Christianity. The only religion that teaches how to heal. The only religion that respects Christ Jesus in his proper place as being the Son of God who taught us how to heal. There's not another church that even recognizes the value of healing. You know, they have people out there that talk to you about overcoming sin, but do they actually heal it? How many people are actually healed of sin? Christian Science attacks it at the root and shows you how to heal it. We don't compare Christian Science with other religions particularly, but you've got to be aware of what other religions are missing. They're missing the most important part of the function of Christianity, which is healing. Healing, which is treating others the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule. Christianity is the golden rule. Are we following it? If we can't think something good about someone else, then we better turn our thinking to God until we get closer to God so we can think about everyone being the child of God. No one is outside of the circle. We have to include everyone as being the child of God. Every animal, everything, every bird, every beautiful scenery is a manifestation of God. The warm sun on a cold, damp day. It's a manifestation of God. God's protecting hand extended out to us. Here you are. I'm giving you warm sunshine. Take it in. Reflect it out to others. Smile to everyone. Give them a hug. Mentally, think of them as being your brother and sister, son and daughter, nephew and niece. I'm so grateful for Mary Baker Eddy and the other excellent healers of Christian Science, Rolf Witski, who gave us the most advanced view of the system of divine metaphysics. Wentworth Winslow, Frederick L. Rawson, Bliss Knapp, all of the ones whose picture is up there in our header. One of the best Bible scholars. Albert Einstein, William Shakespeare, Francis Fluno. Putnam was the name of the Bible scholar. Francis Fluno, who gave us a clear picture of how criticizing others is the biggest mistake we can ever make because it leads to all evil. Helen Wright, who founded the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Clara Barton, she was the founder of the American Red Cross, who made such wonderful statements about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. John, who never faltered, except for that one little time he went to sleep for an hour while Jesus went on up the mountain, but he snapped out of it. So much to be grateful for. The truth that has been revealed in this treatment cannot be diluted, diverted, circumscribed. It is infinite. Truth is infinite. Cannot be limited. Cannot be stopped or reversed. It is here for us to make it our own. Read the section we have on heal everything, and you will see the exact procedure. If you follow, you will be able to heal everything that is a problem. You will transform your life. You will think you're walking on a cloud. It's not just saying a few words here and there. It is transforming where you are right now into a life that is sitting next to God. Letting God be your mind, your spirit, your soul, principle, life, truth, and love. It is recognizing that all good is from God. All intelligence, all wisdom, all knowing, all power, all seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, all substance, all life, all principle, all truth, and all love. And recognizing that there are four operators, just like in math, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. In the system of divine metaphysics of Christian Science, the four operators are the Word, which are the facts about God, the Christ, which is translating everything into a spiritual viewpoint. Christianity, which is proving that you understand enough about God and that you've translated it into a spiritual standpoint so that you can demonstrate the healing effect of Christianity. And science, which is automatically living in this atmosphere, so that the process of that I just described is automatic. As Jesus, when he saw someone, he didn't have to think through these things. He automatically saw the perfect man. He automatically saw the storm be calmed when he was out there on the sea with the disciples, when they were concerned about the ship going down. He automatically saw the calm. He knew he could walk on water. He didn't have to think about it. He knew that matter could not be superior to his own thoughts, because God gave man dominion over the fish of the sea and the fowl of the air, over the water, over everything. He was living in the science of Christianity. That's what Christian Science teaches. And we do it through these recordings as well. God is the great I am, all knowing, all seeing, all acting, all wise, all loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. Amen.